taxes have started.
Thanks so much. Okay, all right. So, welcome to everybody. Since I've got meeting you up, I actually got Liz and Glenn and Steve Del Bianco, Tim, Steve Metallitz, James, David, and myself on the call. Did I miss anyone? Okay. Any comments on the agenda? Any changes suggested? I just messed up my meeting. I'm trying to get another web page. Well, that's the way it goes. I'll let and watch that. All right. If not, then we will go ahead and get started. First of all, are there any is there any discussion on the things that we did last week? Let me pause a moment and allow for that. Nobody has any comments. Everybody's okay with the changes that we did last week. Very good. All right. And that was, of course, in the notes area as well as area 7. And I really appreciate the work that on lists that happened in the past week with regard to area 7 and the GAC hypothesis. So that should greatly facilitate our work today. Let's start off then with area 7 and GAC 4, which I thanks to Liz and James both, they pointed out that was one that we had somehow left off. And so let's take a look at those, and hopefully you have the wiki up.
Yes, it's Glenda Sanchez.
And the
enter. Yes, it's Glenda Sanchez. I'm the leader of the call, and I'm calling in now from another line.
Welcome, Glenn.
It's who is WHOIS. Yes, yes, thank you.
Glenn, are you on both of...
Thank you.
You're with us now? Is that right? We're hearing your conversation. Okay. So, GAC-4 then. Liz had suggested a hypothesis, and so did James. And the text in the GAC letter was, are there methods employed by registrars to detect fraudulent domain name registrations? If so, how successful are they? And what do they do with that information? Liz had suggested a hypothesis of registrars employ successful methods to detect and respond to fraudulent domain name registrations. And James had suggested a three-parter there. Some registrars do not actively employ methods or processes to detect fraudulent domain registrations. B was registrars who employ methods or processes to detect fraudulent domain registrations are ineffective against the problem. And C, registrars who employ methods take no action when a fraudulent registration is detected. Let me just open that up for discussion. And Liz and James, feel free to share the basis of what you put there and any thoughts you have.
Hi, Chuck. This is James.
Go ahead.
Actually, Steve Del Bianco submitted an alternative text that to the list that combined those three areas, I thought, fairly well. Steve, do you have that handy? Or
check. Let's see.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So a significant number of registrars do not apply effective methods to detect fraudulent domain registration and do not take adequate corrective measures when fraudulent information is detected.
And I think you guys, as I recall the email exchange, there was one or two words that were well. Any comments on that?
Chuck, at the very end, I had also suggested saying when fraudulent information is detected or reported, and James and I have gone back and forth about whether it's fair to infer supported as part of the hypothesis that the GAC had in mind, since they seem to focus on detection in this. But I was sharing my perspective with them. I think if you consider the GAC's comments at large, that they're also interested to know what a registrar would do if told that there is an inaccuracy, that is to say, a reported inaccuracy. But I could go either way on that.
And James, I think you had some concerns about saying reported. Do you want to communicate those?
Yeah, and I think concern is probably a strong word. I just had the question of it was not. I didn't take that same interpretation away from the GAC question. I understand there's just one or two sentences there, but I felt that this was much more. Their question was more focused on what registrars were doing of their own accord to internally detect and correct fraudulent domain registrations, and less so of how responsive they were to compliance programs or notices that that their HUIA information was fraudulent.
And Liz, you also worked on this one. What thoughts do you have in this regard?
I was striving for simplicity, and you know, I tried to capture the how successful they are and what do they do in the detect and respond to. But you know, I'm totally flexible about what they do.
Okay.
This is Steve. Chuck, if we were to leave, this is what I mentioned to James and Liz, but if we were to leave reported out, then there would be no place in here that there's a concern about whether registrars take appropriate action to correct inaccurate information when it's reported to them. And James is entirely correct. It's not in the actual GAC number 4, but I infer that from conversations with GAC and listening to their concerns about data inaccuracy in HUIA. But if we leave out reported, we should have a good consensus here, leaving in detected, and we can probably just move on.
Anybody else have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Steve Metallic. I mean, I think James's formulation is correct in terms of what the GAC was asking, and I have two concerns here. One is, if we say detected and reported, are we kind of mixing together what the registrars are doing on their own and what they're doing in response to reports? I suppose some registrars could take the position that they're doing enough on their own, and that's really all that's needed. So this would test that hypothesis more clearly than if we mixed in reported inaccuracies or fraudulent registrations. The second point is that, to some extent, this overlaps with one of the audits that is supposed to be happening in the contract compliance area. And again, I don't think that's necessarily a red line that we can't venture beyond, but it's just worth noting that there is I can't remember the exact name of it, but there is an audit that contract compliance people are undertaking about how registrars respond to reports that come in through the WHOIS data problem reporting system, and how they respond or not to that. So I would just throw that in, that may be part of what we're trying to get at here. We may get some data from another source.
Right. Good. So you're okay with dropping the or reported words at the end?
Yeah, I would be.
Okay. Is anybody opposed to that? So then what
this
go ahead.
Just a question, I guess, more than anything. We're going to, just like with the others, we'll be sending this to the GAC, and at least giving them an opportunity to comment on the hypotheses that we formulated, correct? And even if they don't, and if we do, and even if they can't respond, you know, within the time frame that this group needs in order to include it in our report to the council, as long as that, you know, when they do have a response, even if it's post-report, that they still are welcome to communicate that to the council directly if they And then I'm good with it going either way, to be honest. So.
Thanks, Tim.
I just, this is Liz. I just have a question about where Steve Del Bianco's formulation is. Is that in the...
It was in an email exchange that occurred between Steve and James on our list this past week, Liz.
And I'm trying to find it
here.
Steve,
I'll forward it to you, the exchange. You'll have to go down a couple messages.
Sorry.
Today, but I'm sending it to you right now.
Okay. Thanks.
If you just go down a little ways to the... it was on Monday, August 11th.
Okay. So. I'm sure I have it then, Chuck.
Yeah, well, I just forwarded it to
you. Okay,
so
great.
It says a significant number, and you'll have it. You should be able to cut and paste shortly if you're online.
Yes.
A significant number of registrars do not apply effective methods to detect fraudulent domain registrations and do not take adequate corrective measures when fraudulent information is detected. And we're going to – I've heard no objections to ending it right there, so we'll – will remove the or report it at the end.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
So you've got it?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? Okay. Good. We've taken care of it. Thanks again. The work done on list on this made this one go really well, so I very much appreciate that. So that takes us then, and I'll just go ahead and cover Area 8 like we previously had it structured under other GAC recommendations, and then we'll take each one of what was four before and or three now, I guess, and deal with those, even though the recommendation has been made by Steve and Liz that they be moved. So we'll just jump around a little bit, but covering them as was in the agenda originally, if that's okay. So the first one then is GAC number one, and I think we've covered that via notes. Any comments on the notes at the beginning of the table that anybody has? Is anybody not okay with what's been done at the notes preceding the table? Okay, so that. Go ahead.
This is Steve. I'm just not clear how – are we talking about GAC question number one or bullet number one?
Bullet number one. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's bullet number one.
All right.
I wasn't clear. And I think part of that is the way I wrote the agenda. But, yeah, we're talking about bullet number.
Okay. No, I have no problem.
Okay.
But, Steve, Metallic, in the actual wiki and document, we won't call them bullets anymore. We're calling them data sets. And all the other questions are just referred to as questions. Do you think that'll be clear enough?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anybody disagree with that? Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, so we're okay on the notes at the beginning, and I think those are really important to the overall product that we're going to produce here. So, all right. Then if we go then to GAC 5, GAC question five, I guess it is, huh? And Eric had submitted, Eric Bruner Williams had submitted some ideas there, and there was a friendly exchange between Steve Del Bianco and Eric in terms of what was done, but ultimately what Liz and Steve had recommended, and so we should look at GAC 6 as well. Eric also had a submission there. And if I'm remembering it correctly, Steve and Liz proposed that GAC 5 and 6 be combined and put under Area 7, which is who is data accuracy. Steve or Liz, one of you want to talk to that?
Steve, why don't you go ahead?
Chuck, you summarized it correctly. I gave plenty of admiration to Eric because he was able to tease out actual hypotheses from the GAC questions, but he really structured his hypotheses about the availability and adequacy of data to answer the GAC question. What Liz and I did was try to say that what's important are the potential policy implications for ICANN regarding who is, and so 5 and 6, it struck me, the questions 5 and 6 from the GAC are both about the inaccuracy of who is data with respect to whether it's a commercial purpose or not. And so we propose that, given that that's an inaccuracy question, that we go under Area 7, and we combine GACs 5 and 6 into one statement, two sentences. Here it is. A significant percentage of registrants who operate domains with commercial purposes are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons without commercial purposes. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with inaccuracies will vary significantly depending upon the nation or continent of registration.
Thanks, Steve. Any discussion on that?
Well, this is Steve Metallitz. Just looking at the GAC questions, they're quite different from that because they really seem to be just asking. They're not asking an accuracy question, are they? They're asking a factual question about whether registrants are natural persons or legal persons in number 5, and whether registrants are commercial or non-commercial in number 6. I think the hypothesis that Steve has just gone through is worth looking at, but I'm not sure that is what the GAC asked for.
I'm looking at 5 and 6 right now myself.
And Steve, keep in mind that number 5, the way the GAC phrased it, it's nearly impossible to come up with a hypothesis from that. Eric took one approach, which is a data-centric hypothesis. I took one that was a policy-centric hypothesis. And if we don't like either of them, then we might say that we're not going to have any hypothesis for number 5. Because number 5 simply was a question that the GAC posed with regard to the data sets that they collect. And their question was, as you say, what is the percentage of domain name registrants who are natural persons versus legal? And then they go on to ask the split between those that are for commercial purposes versus not. And you're right, I definitely inferred the policy level question about accuracy here. I also noted in writing back to Eric that once we've tried to infer hypotheses from the GAC, I think we all agreed we're going to circulate this back to the GAC, and the hope is that they would either confirm or correct us on whether we've inferred hypotheses correctly for them. It's doubtful that they'll reply, though, so we want to make this our best shot.
So what we have then is a significant percentage of registrants operate domains with commercial purposes of providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons without commercial purposes. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with inaccuracies will vary significantly depending upon nation or continent of registration. Now, I think the latter part of that, in my opinion, seems to have a good chance of covering what they're getting at in terms of the geographic region information. I understand where Steve Metallis is coming from in terms of the implication that's in the first sentence of the proposed hypothesis. But where do we want to go with this?
This is Steve DelBianco. Just let me add one thing. Consider everything in context. Question 4, which precedes these two, is all about inaccurate registration.
Right.
And so that is why I inferred that number 4 is all about accuracy, and I just flowed that right into 5 and 6.
Other discussion on this?
This is Steve Metallitz. One small thing is that I think in the second sentence we should say the percentage of registrants with such inaccuracies, because there obviously could be other inaccuracies that we're not looking at under this hypothesis.
Good point.
Second, again, this kind of melds, because it melds the two together, I think it's probably significant to the GAC in some way whether the registrant is a natural person or a legal entity, and the commercial non-commercial distinction might be separate. This kind of melds them together. So, for example, someone who claims to be a legal entity operating non-commercially wouldn't be be caught here, I guess. But I'm not sure. I mean, I think it is efficient to put these two together. I'm just pointing out that it may not, again, get all the information that that the GAC was looking for.
Steve, you have any suggestions as maybe?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how you would do it without actually just re-separating them. And I'm not sure that we want to do that. But you could say a significant percentage of registrants who operate domains with commercial purposes are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are without commercial purposes. And then you have a separate one that says a significant percentage of registrants who are legal entities are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons. I'm not sure that it would be more useful or not, but that may be what the GAC was looking for.
Reactions to that? That actually breaks it down a little finer.
This is Steve DelBianco. I'd have no objection to breaking it back into two. The bigger question is whether we want to infer the inaccuracy policy implication or not. And let me ask Tim. Tim's on the call, right? Tim Ruth?
Yes.
Tim, when you collect as a registrar, and I know you're only speaking for one, but are there fields that you collect, even if it's non-WHOIS data, that specifically indicate in a binary way whether one is natural person or legal and whether they have commercial purpose or not?
Tim, are you still on? Glenn, or can you? I don't have meeting view up anymore.
I'm sorry, I was chatting away and I'm on mute, so that was.
We all do it.
We've all been there.
Sorry. Well, you know, it's not that specific. I mean, you know, we do to the extent that we want to be sure we understand who the registrant is for other purposes later. So, for example, if someone, they may use an individual's name, but they leave the company or business field blank or without a specific entry for that. So then in that case, you know, we would consider the individual's name as the registrant of that name. If they fill in the business or company name field, then we actually make them tick a box that says, I understand that by completing this field, that business or company is the registrant of record, so that later, you know, there's no confusion about, if the individual contact starts requesting things or wants to take control of the name, you know, that can't be accomplished without somehow showing that they're still representing that company or business. I don't know if that helps clarify, but it's not that specific that, like a tick box, that you're a natural person or not. But to some extent that data is there. But keep in mind that, you know, in some cases, you know, someone could register that under their personal name, but it's still for commercial use.
In other words, they don't have to tick that box. They could use their personal name and not check that box.
Right, right.
And still be using it for commercial purposes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, got it.
That's helpful, Tim, because as you recall from the years of debate, there's often an implication that people who register as a natural person have certain privacy protections that would not be available to a legal person or someone doing business for a commercial purpose.
Right.
And that distinction then gets to whether they're entitled to certain shielding or not. And if we don't, I'm trying to get to that question to know whether people are, I think the GAC is trying to get to the question of whether people will intentionally misrepresent that they're a natural person when in fact they are either a business or they have a commercial purpose, which changes the degree of shielding they'd be entitled to.
Now, my inclination on this, and I'm not going to make the decision, okay, it's going to be a group decision, but my inclination on this is to break the hypothesis down as Steve Metallic suggested. I don't think we lose anything by doing that, and it provides a little more granularity and clarity. That's my own opinion. But what do others think?
Chuck, this is Steve DelBianco. I'm fine with that, and I assume you would keep this the second sentence on continents and locations with number six.
Yeah, I would. Now, is a suggestion to separate five and six, or to still, I would still think that keeping five and six together is makes sense because of the fact that five really is it's a suggestion to collect some data, and it's really not a really a stretch to come up with a hypothesis specifically for five. Anybody disagree with that?
Yeah, I think you know, I'm okay with that. I guess the way I see five and six is one is talking about, you know, the registrant specifically, and the other is talking about use. So as long as those two concepts are captured, you know, in the hypotheses, I guess, and I think they are. What she,
this is Steve Delviak. The way Steve Metallic said suggested rephrasing, I believe, makes it granular so that five and six are separate statements, not together. And that five dealt with the natural person, legal person distinction and accuracies thereof, and six dealt with commercial purposes or personal.
So maybe then it is better to keep them separate as GAC 5 and GAC 6. Is that what you're saying?
I thought that's what Steve Metallic was saying, and I'm fine with that. Is Steve, are you still with us?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. I think you could keep that second sentence in both cases, although I recognize it's not really in 5, but I think it's fair to say
that regional breakdown is probably something that would be of interest. So I think, you know, number, let me see which is which here.
Yeah.
Number six could just be what we have, what Steve and Liz proposed, just take out the words natural persons. And then number five would just be significant percentage of registrants who are natural persons are providing an actor who has data that implies they are legal entities.
And the second sentence would be the same in both.
The same. Percentage of registrants with such inaccuracy.
Yeah, gotcha.
Is very significant.
Okay.
So I didn't catch that. Boy.
Okay, so let me see if I can do it, and correct me, Steve, either one of the Steves, let me know. But so GAC 5 then would be a significant percentage of registrants who operate domains with commercial purposes are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons, period.
No. I think 5 would be a significant percentage of registrants who are natural persons, who are legal entities, are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons.
You know, the only thing that I'm thinking here, and I don't, you know, and then this is kind of hard to express, so, is that it doesn't matter. I mean, okay. So, for example, you know, from my discussions with various, you know, law enforcement officials as well as some of the GAC, that even if it is a natural person, if the name is being used for a commercial purpose, you know, should there WHOIS data, you know, should there be some option for privacy with that, even though they're a natural person? So, and that's where I kind of see things getting lost here.
That's why I combined them, Tim.
Because, I mean, I think both the concepts, there's two different concepts. One's about, you know, who the actual registrant is, and the other's about the use of the name. So we need to get to both of those, but I think, I don't know if they necessarily are independent of each other because, you know, ultimately, if the use, I think that, in my opinion, that the GAC is probably trying to get to. Just because
Tim,
it's a natural person doesn't mean that, you know, they have some right to privacy that an entity wouldn't, but that the use of that name has some bearing on it.
Tim, this is Steve. I agree with you. I think a natural person who's operating for commercial purposes probably shouldn't be getting the privacy protection of a natural person who's operating for non-commercial purposes, but I'm not sure everyone in the GAC agrees with that, and I think that's why they broke it out. I mean, you know,
that's true.
I think if we, you know, the way Steve proposed it, it might well be a useful study to do. I'm just, I'm just questioning whether we will, you know, people will say, well, you didn't really communicate what the GAC was trying to do.
And I think you may be right. So that's why I kind of favor providing a little bit more just to cover the bases and try and help the GAC out in that regard. So, but again, I'll go with the wishes of the group on this. Anybody?
Well, you know, I'd be interested if David Maher has any input on this, because I know he has been quite involved with these questions about, you know, whether natural persons would have protections than the legal persons and so forth. So if he has any insights, I would love to hear those. I don't feel strongly about this. I think if we go with the Steve and Liz, it's fine, but I think there
Dave,
probably is.
David, I also was not there for a moment. My thoughts on the distinction between natural and legal persons is that it's very difficult to draw distinctions. You may have a woman at home who has a very small business of, you know, selling handmade crafts, something like that. From most outward appearances, is a natural person using the internet. On the other hand, I can see that there may be some fraudulent uses of a registration and an attempt to appear to be a natural person when in fact it's a strictly commercial enterprise. I agree with what Tim said, that there, as I understand it, there's really no effective way to have a bright line distinction between the two. Does that answer your question?
Well, David, what are your thoughts in terms of the suggestions that have been made, whether we keep them combined as Steve and Liz proposed, or separate them into a GAC 5 and a GAC 6 with some minor variations that Steve Metallica suggested? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't feel strongly about it. I'd go along with Steve on this.
So, then, Liz, what do you have for, if we separated them into GAC 5 and 6, let's look at specifically what we would have so that everybody's on the same page in that regard.
So I think I just have GAC 5 at the moment.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's a significant percentage of registrants or legal entities are providing inaccurate who is data that implies they are natural persons.
That's
and
correct.
Then the second sentence. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with such inaccuracies vary significantly depending on nation or continent.
So you understand that that second sentence would be a part of both of them, right, Liz?
Yeah, okay, got it.
Got that? Okay,
yeah.
And you got the with such inaccuracies, because the such was added, okay. All right, so then, Steve Metallus, why don't you again clarify what GAC 6 then would say.
That would say a significant percentage of registrants who operate domains with commercial purposes are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are without commercial purposes. So it's really just taking the words natural persons out of Steve and Liz's draft. And then it would have the same second sentence.
Steve, one more time, please. Sorry.
A significant percentage of registrants who operate domains with commercial purposes are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are without commercial purposes. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with such inaccuracies will vary significantly depending on the nation or continent of registration.
Thank you.
So very few changes in that from what you and Steve proposed, Liz.
Right.
So, is anybody opposed to splitting them up into 5 and 6 as just stated?
When you say splitting them up, the six would be the second sentence?
No. In other words, we'd have two rows in the table, a GAC 5 and a GAC 6, and they both would still be under Area 7. So instead of the way that Steve and Liz proposed that GAC 5 and 6 be combined into one set of hypotheses there, we would actually separate them, and there would be some differences as was just stated. So just to make sure we're clear on this, and sorry for belaboring this, but I want to make sure we're all together. Liz, now that I think you have captured these, would you reread GAC 5 and GAC 6, please?
Okay. A significant percentage of registrants who are legal entities are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with such inaccuracies will vary significantly depending upon the nature or content of registration.
So that's GAC 5. Now GAC 6.
A significant percentage of registrants who are operating domains with a commercial purpose are providing inaccurate WHOIS data that implies they are natural persons. Furthermore, the percentage of registrants with such inaccuracies will vary significantly depending upon the nation or continent of registration.
Now, did I get them mixed up? Did I get them twisted in my mind? So
actually, I think 6 would be that implies they are acting without commercial purposes.
Right. That's what I thought. Okay. I didn't get them mixed up. Okay.
All right. I didn't capture it right. I'm sorry. It implies that they are acting without commercial purposes.
Yeah. That's 6. And then the second sentence is the same in both.
Sorry. Okay.
Now, David, does that make sense in terms of what we're looking at as a...
I have to confess, what I was listening carefully, and it sounded as if they were... I couldn't detect a difference.
Yeah, I understand. There are some differences, though, I think. Liz, is it easy for you to email off the two real quick?
Sure, but I think the upshot is that the first one looks at registrants who are legal entities and the extent to which their inaccurate data implies they're natural persons, and the second looks at registrants who are operating with a commercial purpose and the extent to which they're providing inaccurate WHOIS information that implies that they are acting without commercial purpose.
Right.
So those are the two differences. One is the natural versus legal persons, and one is the commercial versus non-commercial purpose.
It is correct, David, that you have to look very closely at the wording, and it will be helpful, I think, to see it.
Amen.
So, is anybody, now, understanding that all of us are going to get a chance to look at these and... comment after this meeting, is there any objection for right now to just move ahead? In fact, Liz is going to send the wording so that even on this call, if you see you have concerns, please bring it up once you see the actual wording. So is anybody opposed to moving on from 5 and 6? Okay. Well, thanks for the good discussion on this. And of course, we will get to give the GAC a chance at least to respond. We'll see on that one. Okay, that brings us then to the GAC 3. And again, Eric had provided a couple bullets in that regard, and the old GAC 3 is there. Then. Liz and Steve had proposed that could be combined in Area 1. So if you'll jump up in the table to Area 1, you'll see the last item there now is GAC 3. And I'll let either Liz or Steve talk about that.
And Liz, please go ahead.
I got to find it. I'm moving data around. Sorry. Okay, GAC 3. What we're proposing is... there are technical measures available that would effectively curtail misuse of data published on WHOIS databases while preserving legitimate use and open access to the databases.
And
that's just a pretty straightforward change from our technical effectively curtail misuse of data published on HIPAA databases while preserving legitimate use and open access to the database.
Any discussion on that? Minor typo there in the table, but that you can fix that separately, and that is that it looks like that there's a curtail and misuse are run together, at least the way it's showing in the table. So I understand the difficulties of the table.
I'll fix it.
So, but that's an easy fix. So.
Yep.
Any discussion on that? So there are no objections to that as a proposed GAC hypothesis there? Okay. Let me check real quick. Liz, did you send around that wording on 5 and 6?
I did, and it just came through,
okay,
at least in my email.
So.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
Okay.
Chuck, this is Steve. The implication of moving 5, 6, and 3 up into the areas is that we can get rid of this other unclassified GAC section at the bottom of the table as well.
And I think that's nice. If we can do, in my own opinion, is that's a good thing to do. As long as they do seem to fit, I think, in those general areas. Anybody disagree with that? Okay, good. Good. David, have you...
Sorry, can you just clarify where 5 and 6 are going?
Into 7.
Thank you.
You and Steve had put them.
I know. I got data flying everywhere. My fault.
I know. We. You're in a difficult situation when you're trying to capture.
Oh, I'm having fun.
Yeah. So. Anyway, I'm glad you're doing it, not me. So. So okay. David, were you able to? Did you receive the two on 5 and 6 that Liz?
Oh, it just came in the second.
Well, let's just pause a second, take a look at those and see if you're okay with those, and then we'll move on the agenda.
Maybe I haven't been listening carefully, but why do we need both of these? It seems to me that they're essentially identical in the kind of study that would be called for. I see now the difference in wording, but the difference in wording doesn't seem to me to have any substantive difference.
Steve Metalis, you want to take a crack at...
The only reason to do it is, is that the GAC had these as two separate questions. And, you know, the difference is that one looks at one looks at status and one looks at use. And while those may overlap in many cases, they won't always overlap. A lot of individuals are engaged in commercial activity, and some legal entities are engaged in non-commercial activity. So,
yeah,
that's why that's the only reason to do it. I think is because that's how the GAC presented it, and we're trying not to make too many value judgments at this stage about whether which studies are worth pursuing.
Oh well, okay. It would seem to me though that it would not be irresponsible of us to meld the two somehow and say that the GAC, of course, this is what you meant. But I do not feel strongly about this.
I don't feel strongly on the other side. Maybe the way to do it is to do it this way and put in a note that says we think these two could usefully be combined.
Yeah, that's fine. Fine.
So, yeah, does the group want to add a note 5 to that extent, or maybe a note in just with this particular set of hypotheses? Maybe with this area. What's the thinking? So it sounds like we're okay with leaving it the way it is. The question now is do we want to add a note?
Well, I think a note would be useful then, because I just feel some responsibility to say, wait a minute, this is I see the distinction. I think in a way it's a distinction without a difference, and it just seems to me that it would be helpful to the GAC to say, let's combine these two somehow.
What if we were to just add a parenthetical at the end of each of these and just say something to the effect that it...
We could just say
it could be useful to combine this with study.
Fine.
Or could be combined.
Yeah, fine.
We could just say could be combined with 6 and could be combined with 5 at the end of each of them in parentheses.
Sure.
That sounds good.
Right.
Liz, you got that?
Yes, I do. Thanks.
Okay. So we're okay on that then. Thanks, David, for taking a look at that and for all the discussion on this one. Now, our next agenda item is to develop an action plan with a timeline for sending the hypotheses to those who propose the studies who are not on this call. So we don't need to send any to Steve Del Bianco or to Steve Metallis, I assume. Is there any? And is it anybody else on our group here that proposed studies? Okay, so with the exception of any proposed by Steve Del Bianco or Steve Metallis, we would need to send, and I guess one question is, do we send the full set of hypotheses? That may be overkill, in my opinion. So we probably should send the hypotheses that are related to the studies proposed by the individual that proposed them.
Yeah, I'll peel them off. So that, you know, each person, Claudio, will get his, and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And how much time do you think, Liz, is needed to get those out?
24 hours.
So if that could happen in 24 hours, and we're going to give them, a week turnaround time at least, right, 7 days? So, in fact, we may be able to give them just a little bit more than that, depending on when we schedule our next meeting. It seems to me, let me jump ahead to agenda item 7, because it kind of relates to what our timeline. And that is, my thinking was maybe we skip the meeting next week and go to Tuesday the 26th. That would give a minimum of 7 days for the... proposers of the studies to respond, and then for Liz to summarize any comments, and then we would consider those comments and work on our final report on the 26th, get that to the council, and then would be able to present it before the council meeting, the next council meeting. What are your thoughts on that? Does that make
sense? So you're saying out on the 13th, which is tomorrow, back on the 20th, summarize between the 20th and the 26th?
Right. In fact, if they could be summarized with a day or two lead time so that so that the people on the group can kind of review them before our meeting on the 26th.
Right.
That will
so summarize by, say, you know,
the
morning of the 25th.
Yeah.
Say, you know, noon Pacific, the 26th, or 25th, rather.
Does that work?
I think we should talk about GAC.
Well, we can talk about it. I'm not sure there's anything we can do. Sorry for the echo.
Chuck, this is Eric joining the call. I'm probably causing an echo, so I'm going to mute.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Thanks for joining us. That took care of the echo. Thanks a lot, Eric, and we'll give you a chance, even with echo, to jump in. But so what we're looking at right now, and I'd like to get everyone's reaction on this, is that Liz would send out the hypotheses related to the specific studies that individuals not on this in this group proposed, and ask them to provide any comments that they have, not later than 7 days later, which would be the 20th. Then she would incorporate any comments received and send the information to this list, not later than noon Pacific on the 25th. And then in our next meeting would be the 26th of August, same time. And the goal of that, the main agenda items in that meeting would be to review the comments received from the proposed studies and decide whether we want to make any adjustments to the hypotheses, and then finalize the report to the council.
This is Steve Metallitz. You know, when we send these out to these people who made these proposals 6 months ago and haven't heard anything since then, probably, and I'm not even talking about the GAC here, I think one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to be out and they're not able to really respond in a week, or they're going to look at it and say, why did you change my hypothesis? My hypothesis is fine as it is. So I think we need to explain a little bit to them in the cover letter from Liz that first of all, we're trying to make sure everything is in the same hypothesis format and not all proposals had that, and second, that we're trying to focus on factual issues as directed by the council.
Very good, and I totally agree with you that we need to help them understand what the objective is here.
Yeah.
I was kind of planning to do that, but I think your wording is really good, and I'm happy to incorporate it. Yes, I mean, we do need a little background on what's happened since they last heard from us, and
you may want to even refer them to the motion that this may not need to be in the main body, but give them a link or something to the motion that the council passed. I think a third point, and it's kind of similar to the two that you mentioned, Steve, at least one of them, but is that the goal was to make the hypotheses brief and very clear. So they understand that that's kind of a third objective as to what we were trying to do. But you're absolutely right that we need to set give them the background as to what we're doing.
I mean, we could say, you know, define them clearly enough so that they could be tested by a researcher, an independent researcher.
Right.
And I think we also need to say we're not making any value judgment. This group is not supposed to make any recommendations or value judgments on any of these.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Good point.
Yeah, that these were intended to be completely objective representations.
Now, I'm comfortable with Liz drafting this, including the suggestions that we just talked about at the beginning, and going ahead and sending them out so that we get them out as soon as possible. Does anybody want to have a quick look at the message that's going out and provide a quick turnaround to Liz before she does that?
I'm happy to do that if you all like.
If anybody wants that, we'll do it. Otherwise, we'll just authorize Liz to go ahead and do it with the input we've given her.
I think they'll be glad to hear from us.
They may or may not remember that they submitted hypotheses.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be a pleasant surprise to some.
Yeah. Now, should we also add a comment maybe at the end of your message that says, if for some reason you're unable to respond to this in the time allowed, we would still appreciate your feedback, but you need to understand that we have already been granted two extensions by the council, and we had a deadline that we needed to meet, so feel free to provide your input. We can't guarantee how that will be incorporated, but we'd still like to receive it. That's not worded very well, but Liz, I'm sure, can talk.
Yeah. No, I'll capture that thought.
So, okay. Now, so I then, I'll do a quick meeting recap for those who aren't on the call. We all of us should review the things we did today and provide any comments on the list. If you can do that, Liz, is there a chance? Well, let's see. Everybody's pretty clear, except maybe Eric, who jumped in late, of where we're at on what we did today. Because Liz is going to send the hypotheses out, it would be very good if you have any additional thoughts on the work we did today in what was Area 8 and is now going to be combined in Areas 1 and 7, and also GAC 4 from Area 7 that we did today. You need to get that to Liz in the next 2 or 3 hours so that what she sends out tomorrow to the study proposers has any additional edits that we have.
And to facilitate that, I'll turn around right now and update the wiki and send the document out, because I know that it's pretty hard to do that without seeing it. So
very good. So Liz is going to do that now, and so then looks like we've got our action items. Now let me give Eric a chance to come in with his echo and see if he has any questions or thoughts.
Just send me the URL, please, and I'll review.
Okay, great. Okay. So Liz will be doing that, and we're not going to have time for any significant changes. So unless something's really significant, I discourage little changes, because it's very important that we get this out to the study proposers, keeping in mind that we can make final adjustments after we get any comments back from the study proposers as well. So if we'll kind of use that as a way to handle any final things we have, unless it's really significant, let's do it that way to keep the clock.
Understood.
Okay, anybody have anything else in this call?
Just one thing I wanted to say to Steve Del Bianco, which is, Steve, I'm happy to work with you, too, in the next week, although not in the next day, on the pearls. And I think that's really important to do as well, and figuring out a way to display it in a concise way, too. So, you know, we can set up a time to do that or share documents back and forth, but I'm definitely going to try to work with Steve to put that together.
Is that okay, Steve?
I went ahead and did 4 or 5 of them that I was going to potentially propose to the group, but I'm very sensitive to what Tim said last week, which is that if we make decisions on stuff to pull from the underlying submissions and stick it into the table, it needs to meet some high bar here. It needs to clarify and expand so that council can make a better decision. And I have several examples.
It makes sense to put it on the list or on the wiki and let everybody comment, but I just want to, I guess my consciousness, without having looked at them all recently in detail, is that there was some very good thinking there, and also there was some thought around the analysis in terms of the difficulty and what kind of data.
My suggestion, I like your idea, Liz, actually. So if Steve and Liz will take the first crack there, and Steve, you can just send what you've done to Liz, and then if the two of you could by, say, a week from now, if that's possible, have something to the full list, then that'll give us a week before the 26th to get a good review of that and even have some discussion on lists.
So, Tim, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
This is Steve. I would say that we're not doing anything to color or change the actual hypothesis that we're suggesting. Instead,
right,
this is,
right,
if you will, think of it as a third column. It says
notes, or
notable elements from the original study submission that council should consider, and all we're doing is pulling in from the original submission things that are going to be relevant. The note that Tim and I proposed to number one up there about proxies is an example.
And
so,
my question actually is whether, I'm not trying to color anything, but there was also some useful stuff that Lori commented early on in terms of sort of degree of difficulty or where data would likely come from. I just wanted to look at it again and make sure there was nothing that we would miss that would really inform You know, because, anyway.
And that's going to be really useful to the council.
I think so. I thought so. But, again, you know, I'll try to do it with way enough time so that everyone can look at it and make sure, you know, we're not doing... So I guess my one suggestion or would be to augment Steve's point in terms of pulling from the study suggestions themselves to possibly pull from that analysis also, but no work, you know, nothing more.
And all right, Liz, I'm sending you the draft that I had so far.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Okay. So I have another project, thanks, which is good.
Anything else? Well, we actually finished one of these early, which is nice. And so we will meet again in 2 weeks, and I hope everybody will be active on the list so that when we come to that, what could be our final meeting, we'll be able to efficiently wrap things up then and get some stuff onto the council. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a good week.
Have a good week.
Is Glenn's on the call? Glenn?
Yes, M-A.
Hi, Glenn. Do you want to give me a call?
Can I give you a call now?
Sure.
Thanks, David.
Bye.
Bye.